talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead, make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer again with you.
Good morning. This is the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Kate Marquis.
Kate Marquis is joining us today. Kate writes for We Are Movie Geeks as well as the Jewish Light. Kate, what have you reviewed for the Jewish Light lately?
Well, actually, I haven't because I just review for them when it's a Jewish interest film. So it's kind of hit and miss. Depends.
They haven't
on
had any Jewish interest films in
Well, anything since
not
Denial?
Not since Denial. I think there may have been a documentary or so, but nothing really in November, December this month so far. But, you know, you never know. They're going to pop up sometime.
You betcha.
All right. Well, good. Well, today, like I say, is January 30th, and we got a bunch of movies to review, and we've got a couple of RIPs because we lost a couple of people, and we're going to talk about the Oscar nominations.
Oh, buddy.
Lots of surprises. Actually, very few surprises.
Yeah.
A couple of surprises.
Yeah.
Let's first run down the top 12 at the box office. Number 12 was The Founder. That's a disappointment. That movie is not finding its audience, which is a shame because we really liked it. I think a couple of Oscar noms may have helped, but it was shut out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, did I tell you about the comment I got to my review on our site? This woman was saying, "Don't want you to go see this film because it's a big commercial and it's you know, helping McDonald's sell their burgers." And I was like,
"No,
it's not." You say, "Well, obviously you're not seeing the film, but did you read my review? It's not complimentary to the company at all." So, I guess people just didn't have any interest in it. That's too bad.
Oh, well, that is too bad. But, you know, maybe it'll find its audience another time. That only made $2.6 million. Patriots Day made $2.8 million. Gold didn't do very well. Probably because of my negative review at WeirdMovieGeeks.com.
Well, you weren't alone, I'm sure.
It made a measly $3.4 million. Monster Trucks did better. It made $4.1.
Wow, it's still in there.
Yep, Rogue One, A Star Wars Story made $5.2 million. Sing made $6.2 million. XXX, Return of Xander Cage, which I reviewed last week, made $8.2 million domestically, but I think it's cleaning up internationally. La La Land was in number four, and that made $12 million. Resident Evil, The Final Chapter, I saw that. I'll be reviewing that here in a few minutes. That made $13.8 million. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And Hidden Figures is in number three. That made $14 million. Dog's Purpose opened in number two with 18.3, which I think is pretty good. I don't think the scandal hurt it as much as the studio probably feared. It looks so good.
It might have cost them the number one spot, but
possibly. Yeah. The number one spot went to Split again for the second week in a row. Probably because of my positive review. That made $26.2 million. And this week, what opens this week? Space Between Us and Rings, I think, opens. Maybe one of those will be number one. I don't know.
We got an indie doc opening this weekend.
Yeah, well, that's not going to knock off anybody.
And The Comedian opens. It's going to open wide, so.
That's not going to make much.
No, I'm sure it won't.
Box office noise. All right, let's get started on these reviews because we've got six movies to review. Kate, I am not your Negro.
Yeah, that's a it's
which coincidentally is the name of a movie we're about to review.
If any white man in the world says, "Give me liberty or give me death," the entire white world applauds. When a black man says exactly the same thing, he is judged a criminal and treated like one, and everything possible is done to make an example of this bad nigger so there won't be any more like him.
Yes, it is. And actually, I think that's a terrible title, although actually it's a quote from the author.
Is that right?
It's actually an Oscar-nominated documentary about the writer, intellectual, civil rights activist James Baldwin. And it
Is he related to Alec Baldwin?
I don't think so. And it uses his last unfinished manuscript, which he wrote a bare 30 pages of. But that's combined with extensive footage of the author and some interviews about him. I found it a fascinating portrait and one of the most.
So this guy's deceased?
He is deceased for several years, but in his heyday was the late 60s, 70s. So
I'm unfamiliar with him.
Was Native Son was his big book.
Right. Yeah.
Is he like a civil rights guy?
He was an author, but he was involved in civil rights. Yeah, and actually, as you'll see in the documentary, his work and what he's saying is very timely now in light of Black Lives Matter and the push for more diversity in the Oscars and so forth. What he is saying then actually resonates more now, I think, with people, the wider audience than it did at
the time.
So you
liked this movie a lot, didn't you, Kay? Well, you put it on your top 10 list, I believe.
Yeah, one of the things that was really fascinating for me is I had never heard him speak before, and there's extensive footage in which he speaks.
Yeah.
And he is like a hypnotic speaker with this erudite voice that really kind of doesn't match his sort of nondescript appearance.
Yeah, lots of clips of him with Dick Cavett, which I kind of enjoyed.
Yeah, it was a very enjoyable documentary, not a hard slog. You don't have to know anything about Baldwin at all.
How's it compared to the 13th? Because I did sit through that.
Well, I didn't see the 13th.
Did you see the 13th?
I did.
Which one of these is better?
I know I probably like the 13th a little bit more. I think it was a little it didn't have as big a focus as I'm Not Your Negro has on James Baldwin, James Baldwin, right?
Yeah, his name? Baldwin. Yeah. They're both nominated for Best Documentary.
Yes, that's true. Well, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think it's the only movie ever made with the word Negro in the title.
Could be.
I looked it up on IMDb. Although there's several movies with the N word in the title.
Mm. Oh yeah, that's a couple of black exploitation.
Yeah, Legend of N-Word Charlie, Soul of N-Word Charlie, Boss N-Word, and the $6,000 N-Word.
That's kind of.
But those all came out during the height of the black exploitation craze.
That's kind of depressing.
Well, it was different in those days. It was a different time.
It wasn't the atom bomb that it is today.
Yes. And those were Fred Williamson actually did three of those. All right. So, what else do you want to say about this movie? Kate?
Well, I just encourage people to check it out because, if you don't think you want to know anything about James Baldwin, it's really fascinating, and he is a terrific speaker. The interviews are just really engrossing, and like I said, it's very timely. You won't feel like you're looking at something from way back in the past. He's talking about things that people are talking about now.
Yeah.
And beautifully made documentary as well.
And Sam Jackson does a lot of the voiceover work, and he's reading some from the manuscript.
Yes. He's everywhere.
I tell you, he's a hardworking guy.
He is. All right. Well, so Kate recommends I Am Not Your Negro, and Jim does as well, and Kate will be reviewing that for WeirdMovieGeeks.com. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thursday evening, look for Kate's review. The three of us saw Gold.
Look, we got a gold mine.
We got a gold mine.
Yeah, for better or worse, the ride had begun. What a ride.
I reviewed Gold at WeirdMovieGeeks.com. I gave it a 2 out of 5 review. That was actually kind of generous. It's a pretty lousy movie.
Yeah.
It stars Matthew McConaughey as Kenny Wells, who is this fellow who inherits the Washoe Mining Company from his father, played by Craig T. Nelson, in Reno, Nevada. It's based on a true story, although the story in reality took place in Canada. I'm not sure why they moved it to Reno, Nevada, but they did.
Nice to see Craig T. again on the screen.
Yeah,
yes,
definitely. He's not here for very long. He's not. He's kind of a failure. This Kenny Wells dude is. He ends up running the business out of a restaurant where his girlfriend or his wife. I never met.
I think she becomes his wife. Eventually.
Where she works. She's played by Dallas Bryce Howard.
Yeah.
And didn't we just see her in something recently?
Yeah. We saw her in Pete's Dragon this past summer.
I've seen her in something since then, but I guess maybe I'm wrong. But anyways, he teams up with this geologist named Michael Acosta, played by Edgar Ramirez, and they go down to, Indonesia?
Yeah.
And pretty soon after they're down there for a while, Kenny Wells contracts malaria, and he's laid up for a couple weeks, almost dies. But when he recovers, they realize that they have struck gold. They announced that they have struck gold, I should say.
Oh.
So the stock in Washoe goes way up, and everybody wants a piece of the action, et cetera, et cetera. I'm going to have to go a little on the spoiler alert side because it doesn't make any sense reviewing this movie without talking about a development that happens about in the last half hour. There's a hoax, a twist. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A con, yeah. as you might say.
A sting.
And it's probably, it's not very well integrated, I didn't think, the con. It didn't make a whole lot of sense, in my opinion. This movie's really not very good. One of the problems I had with it, I felt like almost the wrong character was sort of at the center of it. This Kenny Wells guy is really not a real pleasant guy. He's not a lot of fun to be with for 2 hours. Matthew McConaughey does this whole pot-bellied, bald-headed, snaggle-tooth sort of Oscar bait. Yeah. And, but he's still, I felt like, I even said in my review that stylistically, he's still playing the same character that Matthew McConaughey plays in all of his films, this sort of cocky, wild man, gonzo guy. He's not showing a lot of range outside of his physical appearance. And he teams up with this Michael Acosta guy played by Edgar Ramirez, and that guy's much more interesting, or his what he does in the movie is much more interesting, but he's off-screen for long stretches of time. And he's the one who engineers the con. So unless I misinterpreted the ending of this film, I didn't really quite understand why the guy who's engineering the con is in the background. I mean, what's the point of showing a sting if you're not showing it from the point of view of the person who's putting it together?
Well, I guess they want us to be as surprised as Matthew McConaughey's character is.
I guess, yeah, but it doesn't. It makes for a less interesting film because you've got McConaughey, you know, in almost every scene, and you know, he's cheating on his wife, and he's chain smoking, and he's not a real fun guy to be around. He's kind of a dork.
And McConaughey goes out of his way to show off that pot belly in so many scenes. It's like, yeah, you're doing it, De Niro. Yeah, we know it. Yeah.
There is one line in there I liked, and that applies to McConaughey's character, in which somebody else, one of the other potential investors, refers to him as a raccoon that has the Hope Diamond.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you don't want to get near him, but on the other hand, you don't want him to get away, which I thought was a pretty funny line.
Yeah. That, you know, it wasn't a terrible movie. I kind of wish that, you know, Kenny Wells had been a supporting character in the film. You know, that might have been made it a better film and maybe brought this Michael Acosta guy to the front, but you don't really know much about this Michael Acosta guy. You know, what's he up to? What's his motivation? Edgar Romero's is good, but he kind of plays it close to the vest. He doesn't really tell you about what's going on inside his head. It's also kind of a dull film. I didn't really get into it. It's also kind of a cheap looking film. Did you notice that? There's a scene where he rings the bell on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, and there's like, you know, four or five guys on the floor of the Stock Exchange. You know, you would think that would be an opportunity to put some production value in the thing, but they don't.
CGI a crowd into it at least.
Something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what'd you guys think? I gave it 2 out of 5. How many would you give it, Jim?
Oh, I think that's about right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I have to agree.
Yeah, all right. So it didn't do very well. It made a lousy $3.4 million, and it probably cost, oh, I don't know, $40 or $50 million to make, so it's going to stay in the red, which is too bad, but better luck next time, Mr. McConaughey. We do not recommend Gold. Let's move on.
It'll be a distant memory by Valentine's
Day.
That's
for sure. The comedian stars Robert De Niro and Jimmy Walker, reteamed at last.
Here he is, my famous brother, Jackie Burke.
How are the kids?
Kid. We have one kid.
She's an adult now.
She's getting married.
I thought she was a dyke.
You say lesbian.
I didn't see it, but Kate and Jim both saw it. Guys, tell me about the comedian.
Well, it's about De Niro's character. He plays a comic, not a washed-up comic, but he's having a tough time.
Is his name Rupert Pupkin?
No. I wish it were about Rupert Pupkin. It'd be more interesting. But he's playing a character called Jackie Burns, who had some success about 30 years ago with a sitcom. So when we first meet him, he's playing at a club hosted by, you know, it's Jimmy Walker's the host, and his former sitcom people, Brett Butler, is there and all that. And he's got, De Niro's character's got a hair trigger. He's kind of doing a combination of Don Rickles and Andrew Dice Clay is what his stand-up is. And somebody in the audience is videotaping him, you know, for their little podcast or I guess, a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And De Niro's character ends up, you know, decking the guy and, of course, gets taken into the courts, ends up doing about a month in the slammer and has to do all this community service. He's working out of a sort of home shelter in New York City. That's where he meets the Leslie Mann character, who's also been, you know, doing community service, but her father is played by Harvey Keitel, and he wants her to come down to Florida. And you know,
Harvey Keitel and De Niro have many scenes together.
Yeah, quite a few actually.
They used to co-star together in the 70s. I'm not sure if they've been in a film together.
But it's been a while, I'm sure. Yeah. But I don't know, this thing. You know, the Jackie Burns character isn't very likable. You get to meet. He's got a relationship with his brother, played by Danny DeVito, who's got this deli, and of course he's hitting him up for money. And DeVito has this wife played by Patti LuPone. What a thankless role that is. Yeah. She's just a sour shrew. Yeah. And it's like, Patti, come on, man. You turn that down. But it's about this romance he has with Leslie Mann. I think this is Leslie's attempt to get something done or get something going, you know, beyond her hubby Judd Apatow's movies.
Isn't she 30 years younger than De Niro?
Yeah. And of course they're going to get together. And here's a weird scene at a wedding, and it's where they kind of hook up at the end of that.
Well, the two of them, despite the age difference, the characters are pretty similar. They're both kind of bomb throwers. They disrupt things.
Yes,
and they enjoy doing that.
So. Yes. But this you'll find amusing. Leslie Mann's character goes down to Florida, and then De Niro's character finds out that he's wanted by one of those Hollywood collectibles and autograph shows, and they're going to fly him down there and pay him $25,000. And I thought, nobody's going to get that kind of deal at one of these little autograph shows. Yeah. Come on, man. So, it's, De Niro is much more believable as a bad comic like Rupert Pupkin than as one that's sort of been embraced by everyone. Yeah. And at one point he does some stuff that goes viral, and, you know, that's the whole, you know, millennial stuff going on with that. So, you know, it just kind of meanders. It's got like four screenwriters, for gosh sakes.
Yeah. But how is Jimmy Walker? I think that's what we all want.
Well, yeah, you know, he's gone by about the 5-minute mark
right,
or 10-minute
right.
mark.
Did he say dynamite?
I think when he goes up.
And
of course,
he does.
De Niro's old sitcom character has a
tagline. Yeah.
You know, but everyone wants him to say, but, you know, it just annoys him. But it's kind of unpleasant, and Lord knows De Niro's done worse lately, but this isn't adding anything.
Dirty Grandpa.
I'm sure this is better than that, but that's not saying a whole lot.
I think Leslie Mann has better comic moments in this than De Niro does for the most part, because he plays such an unlikable comic, and he's an insult comic, and it's pretty. The insults fall pretty flat for the most part.
Yeah, De Niro's delivery is not very good, considering there was Jeffrey Ross was one of the screenwriters. You think he could give him some more tidbits. But I just thought Leslie Mann's character was just kind of underwritten, that she's just kind of there to be the girl through a lot of it and be supportive of him and clash with him and have a meet cute and all that.
But so. I think the little bit she got, she tried to make the most of it in comic terms, because the character is pretty outrageous, I thought.
Her
character.
Yeah, that's true.
Even though it was kind of, it's sort of a plot device.
True. That's
so
true.
Who's reviewing The Comedian for
WeAreMovieGeeks.com?
So look for Jim's review. That opens this Friday?
Yes. Okay. I don't know how wide it's opening.
Okay.
It's opening.
Probably not wide at all. I would suspect it's at Landmark only, but I could be wrong.
Yeah.
So look for Jim's review of The Comedian this Thursday night at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. It sounds like Jim nor Kate really cared for it all.
No, not very good.
Yeah, maybe give it 2.5, maybe.
Or 2.
Naruto opens Friday. I haven't seen Naruto. Jim and Kate have seen Naruto, though. Kate, what do you think of Naruto?
Well, I liked
it. What is Naruto?
I liked it a lot. Well, it's a fictionalized film that's about the poet, political activist, Chilean Nobel Prize winner, Pablo Neruda.
Who plays him?
And he's played by an actor. His name in here. I wasn't familiar with him. Luis Gnecco. But the main character is partially Neruda, but also this policeman that is trying to capture him because he's run afoul of the new government in post-World War II Chile, where he is a senator, but he's with the Communist Party. And prior to the end of World War II, of course, Russia had been an ally. But, you know, after the war, you know, we have the start of the Cold War, and people start looking hard at communists, and this includes in Chile. And when the new president is elected, he decides to crack down, and pretty shortly the senator is on a arrest list, and this policeman is tasked with finding him because immediately he goes into hiding.
Well, you would think he would go off into the jungle somewhere, but he's hiding pretty much in the city.
Right.
You
know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Part of the charm of this film, I thought, is first of all, it's narrated and it has a style that's almost like film noir. It's narrated by the detective who is pretty, you know, judgmental towards Neruda, and he's pretty ironic. He says, well, Neruda's, you know, he's fat, he's balding, he's pampered, he's used to living high, and he's, you know, although he's a communist. So this is not Shay living in the jungle. This guy is used to being a celebrity and treated that way. On the other hand, every time he encounters a ordinary Chilean, he's very touched by them, and he came from poverty himself. So you see a lot of humanity in there. And this is a beloved poet of the Chilean people, and he's very famous in South America, although people here may or may not know him. So his stature as an artist gets a lot for him as far as his encounters with people, more so than just being a communist. He just happens to be a member of the Communist Party. But clearly there are people much more hardcore on those political views than he is. But it becomes this kind of cat and mouse chase in which the detective, who's played by the Mexican actor Gael Garcia Bernal, is sort of like Javert hunting Jean Valjean in Les Miserables, in which he becomes obsessed, but the nature of the obsession changes, and we learn things about Neruda, and we learn things about the detective as they have this slow motion chase, because Neruda's not very well hidden. They find him periodically, and the government has a kind of mixed feeling about it. They want to put him on an arrest list, but there's, you know, international blowback if they actually arrest him and imprison him. So, you know, they want to hunt him more than they want to actually catch him.
And the thrill of the hunt.
And the film has a beautiful visual style. It's by the same director as Jackie, if you've seen recently. Pablo Larraín, I think I'm mispronouncing his name, and it has an interesting visual style. It's very strong, but a lot of scenes are very compact and closed in and claustrophobic because he's in hiding, right?
Yeah.
And then it opens up towards the end of the film when they get into a chase that's out in the mountains. And
are you reviewing this for Weird Movie Geeks?
Yeah. And
how many stars will you be giving?
It takes a surreal turn. I'd probably give it 3.5 because I really liked it a lot. It's very well directed.
Jim, if you were to review it for WeirdMovieGeeks.com, how many stars would you be giving?
Oh, I think I'd probably give it about that. It certainly got the production values are really nice. They really capture that era very well.
I have to say, though, if you're not familiar with Neruda, or if the name Augusto Pinochet doesn't resonate with you, you ought to do a little research before you see this film. But I think it is worthwhile.
Okay.
It's in Spanish. You have to read subtitles.
Okay, very good.
What?
A movie that's not in Spanish with subtitles is A Dog's Purpose.
Whenever life got Ethan down, I knew exactly what to do.
Ready?
I'm ready.
Go, Billy!
We played with that ball all afternoon. Ethan loved it.
Yes.
Jim and I saw Dog's Purpose last week over at the Esquire. That was a lot of fun. And Jim reviewed it. And there was two dogs in the audience. Did you notice that?
Yeah, you were pointing that out. Some of those service dogs, I guess.
They were service. Like, you'd think they would have been, like, watching the movie. Because, you know, whenever my dog sees dogs on TV, he's, like, staring at the TV, getting all excited.
He doesn't bark at them, does he?
No, he does. You bet he does. Yeah. Except Snoopy. For some reason, if we're watching Charlie Brown cartoon, he doesn't bark at Snoopy. But he'll bark at other cartoon dogs.
Really?
Anyways, I got a little off subject here. Dog's Purpose. Jim, you reviewed it. How many stars did you give it?
Oh, so did I give it three, I guess?
Three? Is that all? How black-hearted are you? How could you not give this wonderful movie about the love of dogs 5 stars? It is a little overwhelming in its wholesomeness, but I really liked it. What did you three is not too bad. What did you dislike?
Well, I think some of the subplots just don't work that well, or not as interesting as the main subplot is about this boy Ethan, and he grows up with the dog, and then you know they get
Bailey,
yeah, and they get separate. Well, when Ethan is in college, Bailey finally hicks the bucket, and then he's sort of reincarnated. That's the deal. Yeah, the voice of the dogs or the dog spirit is Joss Gad, who was Olaf, of course, from Frozen, and he's not as they tread a thin line there. He could be, you know, if they would have it could have been very obnoxious and, you know, cloying, but you know, some of his vocal performances are really tough, and some of the you know, really brutal scenes. I think the last dog is sort of neglected by this disreputable pop couple, and you really feel for the dog. And I just didn't think the other some of the subplots, the police dog sequence is just not that compelling, you know. The same with the college student that that fills the dog with junk food. The little corgi, I guess, is when he he's in different types of dogs all through the thing. Mm-hmm. But you say maybe if it had just zeroed in on Ethan and his family, that would have been more interesting. But of course, when we meet the adult Ethan, he's played by Dennis Quaid, and he's got that nice crinkly smile. He's doing
full. There's about a 40-year gap.
Yeah,
between when Bailey dies and then when the reincarnated dog is being reunited with his owner, who's now like a 60-year-old man.
Yeah, and he gets reunited with. Well, the thing is, when Bailey helps young Ethan or teenage Ethan start a romance with Britt Robertson, who's a very busy young actress. We've seen her in a couple of films, and she's going to be in a film next week too. And then what's great is, at least for me, that the adult Britt Robertson is played by Peggy Lipton.
That's right.
And that's delightful to see her on the screen again. You know, still a lovely woman. But you know, it's sort of. Addresses the whole, you know, or it's playing to the sort of cult of pets, and specifically dogs. You know, we're on the social media, and people are always on there about what such magical, wonderful creatures they are, and you know,
they are superior to cats.
well, but there's a cat in one sequence in this, the scandal, the video sequence, that's very, very brief in the film.
Yeah.
You know, that whole rescue.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious when that happens. And the movie has this sort of wholesome sort of, you know, Norman Rockwellian sheen to it that you sometimes see in these Christian movies like Heaven is for Real or something. And you kind of have expected to go off in a sort of a Christian direction at some point. It doesn't, although it does address reincarnation, but I think, you know, it addresses reincarnation in that it's a plot device to get from dog to dog.
Yeah.
It doesn't really dwell on it or you know, address the implications of reincarnation.
Yeah.
But I really like this movie. It's a great family film. You know, anybody can see it. If you love dogs, you're going to love this movie. You know, you want to go home and walk your dog or hug your dog or something like that. It totally works. It is kind of cloying and cliche and corny, but in a good way.
Yeah, I think I mentioned in my review it was Marley Can Wait, you know, instead of Warren Beatty jumping into bodies, it's this dog spirit jumping into different dogs.
And the polar opposite of wiener dog.
I would have given it a probably 4 stars. Jim gave it 3, but it's a good movie. Dog's Purpose, it made $18.3 million over the weekend, so I think it's probably going to actually continue to do fairly well. All right, let's move on to our last film to review, and I think I'm the only one in the room who has seen Resident Evil Final Chapter.
10 years ago in Raccoon City, there was an outbreak. It spread across the world within days.
One way or another, our world is coming to an end.
Yeah, they did not show that to the critics.
No, they don't need to, because this is a movie, one of these movies that kind of knows its audience. And
is this the 12th one or something?
No, apparently it's the 6th, but I thought it was the 5th. This is a series that I'm pretty sure I've seen all the chapters. And, you know, and last weekend I went to the Moolah and I saw Friday the 13th, the final chapter. Which, of course, turned out not to be the final chapter. And I suspect Resident Evil, the final chapter, is probably not going to be the final chapter either, because I think these Resident Evil movies do really well.
Especially overseas.
Yeah, right? Globally. Mila Jovovich is back as Alice, and this Red Queen that exists as a hologram has convinced Alice to return to the Umbrella Corporation's underground complex, The Hive, which was where the original zombie outbreak originated in the first Resident Evil. Oh, gosh, that's probably been at least 15 years ago, or maybe 20 years ago that first Resident Evil came out. And then she can find this liquid that will, or this device that opens up, and this liquid sprays up in the air, and every zombie across the world will die if she can get this liquid and expose it to the air. and then she teams up with some of the characters from the old movie. Allie Larter has been in these films. She teams up with her again, and Ruby Rose, who I just saw in XXX, Return of Xander Cage, last week. In fact, I went to the Chesterfield Mall 3D IMAX screen the last two Fridays in a row, and I saw XXX, and then I saw this Resident Evil Final Chapter. I think this is a movie made for the fans of this series, and it's a pretty good entry in this series. It's been sort of an inconsistent series. The first one's really good. The second one's really lousy. The third one was much better, etc. This isn't the best in the series, but it's, you know, it's the second or third best in the series. I want to talk about this one action sequence that opens the film, and it's really amazing. There's this army of zombies, and it's like World War Z. There's thousands of them, and there's this vehicle that's a kind of a cross between a tank and a bus. It kind of reminded me of the vehicle in Damnation Alley, but it's going across this desert wasteland, but it can't go very fast, and these zombies aren't slow Romero zombies. They're like fast running zombies. So this vehicle can go about the speed that these zombies can run. So there's thousands of zombies chasing this vehicle across the desert, and Mila Jovovich and these villains are on top of this vehicle, and they're fighting. And it really reminded me of Mad Max. It's probably influenced by Mad Max. And this goes on for 25 or 30 minutes, and it is a spectacular action sequence. But then after that, the movie kind of goes downhill a bit. They seem to really recycle a lot of the action stuff from the first several Resident Evil movies. There's this sort of lattice work of deadly laser beams that kind of comes out at the wall, and you have to sort of dive and dash through it, or else it'll lop your limbs off. And it's all derived from a video game, so it kind of plays like a video game. And they're fighting in a scene where the walls are slowly closing in on them. They better finish their fight, or they're going to get squished. There's a scene where there's this big giant fan that's blowing on them, but then the fan reverses, so then it's sucking them in, so they're going to get sucked into this fan if they don't make the right steps, et cetera, et cetera. It's just kind of like from point A to point B to point C, like a video game. This movie is directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, who has actually helmed all of these Resident Evil movies, and he wrote this one too, and he does a pretty good job. The producers must like this guy. He's married to Mila Jovovich. And he puts her in these films. And she used to be married to Luc Besson, who put her in some of his films as well, The Messenger and Fifth Element. But now she's married to Paul. Paul W.S. Anderson has a kind of a reputation for being something of a hack. He did the Mortal Kombat movies 25 years ago. That's kind of how he got it started, which weren't very good movies, but he does a good job, I think. He probably brings these things in on budget and on time, and I'm sure the producers are happy with him. I think he does a pretty good job. My problem with it is it doesn't, like I said, it seemed to recycle a lot of the scenes from the earlier films, and it's sort of humorless, too. I saw XXX.
Oh, that's bad.
In the same theater the week before, and I had a lot more fun with XXX. But the fans of Resident Evil Final Chapter are going to be very, very happy with this new Resident Evil movie. If I were to have reviewed it for WeirdMovieGeeks.com, I would have probably given it, maybe 3.5 stars. So that is it for new movies. Doggone it, what are we seeing this week? We're seeing Space Between Us. I don't know much about that. It looks to be like Nicholas Sparks with some kind of sci-fi element, maybe.
Oh, that's like a young adult novel thing to me.
Yeah. But I don't think it's based on a book.
Brett Robertson is in that. That's the other film that she has.
And who's the guy? So the guy that was in that last Tim Burton movie.
Yeah, that was Asa Butterfield. Carla Gugino and Gary Oldman are in it, too.
I don't know much about it, but I'll be seeing it, and I'll be reviewing it. So look for my review of Space Between Us Thursday night at WeirdMovieGeeks.com. You guys are seeing... I can't go, but you guys are seeing Cure for Wellness.
Yeah, that's in another week.
But that's not until the 17th. But you guys are seeing that this week. And then Rings opens Friday. I don't think they're going to be showing that
to us.
They're
not going to show that to us, I'm sure.
I guess that's the second sequel to The Ring.
Well, it's like a reboot, isn't it?
I don't know.
I'm thinking it is.
Is it?
Yeah,
okay.
That's what I guess. Okay, but it's still a VHS tape. It's not a DVD disc or something. Blu-ray.
Not that rebooted.
Ooh, good. Old school, baby.
That's right.
So we'll be back to review some of those next Monday. And The Red Turtle, I guess we can review that next Monday. That's an animated film that was up for an Oscar. We'll talk about the Oscars nominations, which came out last week. Some more in a few minutes. A couple local things. White Zombie is screening at Schlafly Bottle Works this Thursday night. Yes. Bela Lugosi from 1932. That's a great movie. It's not from Universal. I think it's from Monogram, maybe.
PRC, maybe.
Yeah, it's from one of the more Poverty Row studios, but it's really good. It's one of Bela Lugosi's very, very best films. That's Thursday night at 7 o'clock at Schlafly Bottle Works, and that's a fundraiser for Helping Kids Together. I'll be hosting that, which is why I can't go to Cure for Wellness. There's a documentary at Webster University this Friday and Saturday and Sunday called Reset. It's a documentary about a French ballet troupe. That sounds exciting. And then Wednesday night, also at Schlafly, is the Strange Brew film series, and it is Zatoichi Goes to the Fire Festival, which is a movie from the 70s. Apparently there was this 24-film Zatoichi series, which I have seen exactly zero of these Zatoichi movies, but they certainly have their audience.
It's a blind samurai warrior,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
My son's a fan of that.
Is it? Oh. Was that right?
But I don't know much about it.
Well, tell them to go to Schlafly on Wednesday night.
I will.
That's $5. All right. And, of course, my 16-millimeter double feature night is a week from tomorrow, February 7th, and I will be showing a 16-millimeter print of Trading Places, starring Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yes.
And after that, about 10 o'clock, I'll be showing a 16-millimeter print of Macon County Line, which is really, I'm really excited about showing that print. So that's at the Way Out Club, 2525 Jefferson, and that is free, although we do set out a jar to take donations for the National Children's Cancer Society. I guess that's it locally. We lost some people, including Mike Connors. Star of Mannix.
Yes, and, Joe Mannix.
Yeah, he's more of a TV guy, but he had a movie career. He was in fact, I just picked up a movie poster for a Voodoo Woman from 1957 and put it on my wall just about 2 weeks ago.
Was he called Touch in
that? He was called Touch. Although he was a Bosnian. He had some Bosnian name he was born with. I guess he changed his name to Touch Connors. And then Mike Connors. Just a couple weeks ago, I was watching Sudden Fear with Joan Crawford.
Right.
And Jack Palance, and there he was, Touch Connors. And that's kind of when I realized he was still alive, because I was thinking, Touch Mike Connor, whatever happened to him? And then I kind of looked him up, and, oh, he's 92. And then, of course, what always happens, 2 weeks later, there he is in the obits. But that's okay. He had a nice long career. Mannix was his big show, which I loved Mannix when I was a kid.
Yeah, it's one of my buddy's favorite expressions. He sees an empty spot in front of a restaurant, and he says, well, that's Joe Mannix's spot.
Yeah.
Because he never had to look for parking.
That's right. So RIP Joe Mannix, a.k.a. Mike Connors, a.k.a. Touch Connors, who was, I believe, 92. And also some gal from Perry Mason by the name of Barbara Hale. Jim, talk about Barbara Hale for a minute.
Oh, Barbara Hale had a pretty good movie career before Perry Mason. She was in a lot of the B films, I guess, second-run films, although she is in a couple of films that are considered classics now. She was in The Window, which they remade later on as Cloak and Dagger. It's a classic noir with a little boy that sees a crime. And, of course, she was in one of the few movie biographies. She was in Jolson Sings Again. And, of course, we recall her from Giant Spider Invasion and The Falcon in Hollywood. But, you say, she's got immortality as Della Street, Perry Mason's right-hand gal. Gal Friday, I guess, on the Perry Mason Show, which extended into TV movies into the 80s and 90s and such. So, and she's the mother of William Catt, one of the actors that had a little career in movies. And Carrie.
All right, well, so RIP to Ms. Hale. And a little closer to the big screen was Mary Tyler Moore. She died the other day at age 80. She was mostly known for TV, although she was nominated for an Oscar for Ordinary People back in 1980. And what other big screen? You know, you would have thought after Ordinary People she would have been a movie star, but she really wasn't. There was
maybe because it wasn't comedy. People wanted to see her in that likable
role. Maybe she just
charmed. That one, maybe.
Yeah. She did like Finnegan Begin Again, and nothing major. She was in David O. Russell's one with
Flirting with Disaster.
She's really funny in that.
That was her last really great movie role. That is, she's very funny.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, she was one of the last leading ladies that Elvis romanced in a movie, or tried to. That's Change of Habit.
Which is considered one of Elvis's very worst films.
Well, I guess that was his last acting, sort of, it was just documentaries ever, concert movies.
Yeah, and I think he only sang one or two songs in Change of Habit.
Yeah. And, of course, she sang and danced alongside Julie Andrews in Thoroughly Modern Millie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she was in a Charles Bronson movie.
Yeah.
The X-15 story.
Yes. But quite an actress.
Yes, yes. And very much beloved as the star of Mary Tyler Moore Show and the Dick Van Dyke Show. So R.I.P. to her. And finally...
Can we talk about the elephant in the room?
Oh, the elephant man in the room.
Elephant man. Oh, yeah, that's what I was getting to last, because this guy was a pure movie star, and he died, John Hurt, at age 77 the other day. I didn't know he was sick, which is...
I think I read that a while ago.
We just saw him in Jackie.
Yeah, he's just such a great, great actor. So many small, distinctive roles.
Oh, yeah, great
some
face.
Some big leading roles, like at The Elephant Man in 1984. Yeah. Just one of my favorites, because he was just such a talented guy and such a wonderful... fearless actor. Mm-hmm. Great.
And of course, he's immortal in the sci-fi horror genre.
Oh, yes.
For giving birth to the alien, the first chestbuster.
Right. And I guess he's the first one from that film to pass away. You know, Holm, I believe, is still alive.
Yeah, Harry Dean Stanton's still with us.
Yeah, those guys are still alive.
Yeah,
But he was nominated for the Midnight Express back in 79. Yeah, I guess that's the one that kind of put him on the map.
Right. He was in Man for All Seasons.
Oh, yeah, I think that was his first movie role.
Oh, yeah.
But he also had a career... in theater and British TV.
Yes.
He was all over the place.
Oh,
and very
pretty. And he was in the Harry Potter universe?
He was in Harry Potter.
I don't know who he played. But
V for Vendetta. He was, it says, I looked him up. I didn't realize he was in that last Indiana Jones film also. So,
oh, was
he was in Heaven's Gate, too.
Oh,
That's right. So what a career this guy had.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. He was in a lot of films.
Such a talented actor. What a loss.
Yeah, and his performance in Jackie is pretty great, too. His scenes with Natalie Portman is very, very nice.
Yeah, that's a great performance to go out on, because it's a really pivotal role, even though it's small. And that's kind of his signature. He would play those outstanding smaller roles that just kind of... change the phone
into your microphone.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. So, R.I.P. to Mr. John Hurt. But we still have William Hurt and Mary Beth Hurt.
That's true.
Let's move on. Yes, John Hurt was nominated for Academy Awards 2 times.
Was it Midnight Express and what was the other one? Do you recall?
The Elephant Man. Best
actor. Oh yeah.
Now
that takes some skill to be able to emote past all that makeup.
Oh yeah, really exactly. Amazing. That's a real actor that can do that.
As we get to Academy Awards, last Tuesday morning they announced the 2017 Academy Award nominations. We talked about this last week on our podcast here. We sort of predicted, and we were basically right. Not a lot of surprises this year.
It did go to 9 with Best Picture again. I think that's what it was last year.
Yeah.
It was 9.
Arrival, Fences, Hacksaw Ridge, Hell or High Water, Hidden Figures, La La Land, Lion, Manchester by the Sea, and Moonlight.
Yes. Well, so, like you say, the PGA gave their Best Picture to La La Land, so that's... pretty big indicator of what could happen on
No surprises in this list.
Well, something I was surprised about, not necessarily for Best Picture, was I was surprised there was only one nomination for Silence.
The Martin Scorsese
film.
Right. Well, it just didn't make enough of a mark, I guess.
Yeah.
Some people didn't like it.
Just came out too late.
That was a movie that was going to be a game changer, and it wasn't. I mean, look at 8 or 9 months ago, Birth of a Nation was going to sweep the Oscars, and I don't think it got a single nomination.
I don't think it did, and I thought that was a shame because it was a strong film.
But there was a rape scandal.
There was
a
controversy,
like
an old one.
So it is what it is. Those best pictures... I'm trying to think of something that's left off that list.
Well, another thing I thought should have gotten some kind of nomination was The Founder, which I thought was a really strong film.
Yeah. And, it would have helped its box office.
Once again, came out too late, maybe, or just didn't get enough at the box office.
I guess, it was probably a runner-up, if they have runners-up, but it didn't.
That's the same thing with that. I mean, they didn't push that movie.
Yeah.
Right, at least her performance should have gotten some consideration.
I think Miss Sloan was a very good movie.
It was, but really great performance.
No, I didn't think it was a very good movie. It got some good reviews and some. It got kind of mixed reviews, and it bombed big. All right, lead actor Casey Affleck, Andrew Garfield, Ryan Gosling, Viggo Mortensen, and Denzel Washington. The biggest glaring omission is, of course, Tom Hanks. Is Sully. I think everybody. This is kind of the third snub for Tom Hanks in the past 3 or 4 years. If you think about Captain Phillips and. The one where Saving Mr. Banks. Yeah, I think he was considered shoo-ins then. He was considered a shoo-in this year. And I thought the Academy loved Tom Hanks.
That's what I thought. I'm very surprised by that also.
They must have got mad at Tom Hanks about something. What did Tom Hanks do?
He just won too many Oscars.
I guess. Viggo Mortensen's a bit of a surprise. I really disliked that movie, Captain Fantastic, but he was quite good in it.
He was very good.
I guess, you know, Ryan Gosling's, I guess, since the La La Land's such a juggernaut, they couldn't ignore Ryan Gosling. I didn't think he was that good in La La Land. But I guess Casey Affleck seems to be the front runner.
Yeah, it's pretty much going to be him. Even though Denzel got the SAG Award last night.
Is that right?
But last night, the SAG Award went to Emma Stone, so I think she's a contender in that race again.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And lead actresses, Isabelle Huppert, Ruth Negga, Loving, Natalie Portman, Jackie, Emma Stone, La La Land, Meryl Streep, Florence Foster, Jenkins. The big omission would be Amy Adams.
Yeah, it would have been nice to have Joel Edgerton in Best Actor, too, for Loving. You know, he was terrific in that.
But neither of them really would have won. I guess Meryl Streep is probably the one that kind of snuck in there and took away Amy Adams' spot.
Yeah, I think so.
She's not going to win.
And that Benning spot, probably, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Although I didn't like that movie. I didn't like a lot of these movies.
A lot of people adore that film. I really thought she did it.
I don't get it, but that's okay. I think Natalie Portman's probably the front runner, but I don't know in this category. Emma Stone could upset Isabelle Huppert. I wouldn't count her out.
Oh, me neither. Or even Ruth Negga.
Yeah, you never know. We'll find out, I guess, at whenever it is. Is that first week in March or something?
Something like that, yeah.
Let's move on to the next category. This is supporting actor. Mahershala Ali, Moonlight, Jeff Bridges, Hell or High Water, Lucas Hedges, Manchester by the Sea, Dev Patel, Lion Men, Michael Shannon for Nocturnal Animals. That's the big surprise because the other actor won the Golden Globe for...
Aaron Taylor-Johnson.
He won the Golden Globe for Nocturnal Animals, but he wasn't the one nominated. They sort of pulled Michael Shannon in. He was nominated a few years ago for, was it Revolutionary Road? This is his second nomination. He's not going to win. It's going to be either Mahershala Ali or Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Or I wouldn't count out Lucas Hedges either. I think he was a little bit of a surprise. But I don't know.
Came out of nowhere, that guy.
Yeah, this one's kind of wide open.
That kid. Yeah.
Anybody else that should have been on this list?
Supporting. Well, I'd love to have seen any of the guys from Denial in there, but it just was not to be.
And Ben Foster from
Hell or High Water, too. He's terrific in that.
Yeah. All right. Supporting actress was Viola Davis, Fences, Naomi Harris, Moonlight, Nicole Kidman, Lion, Octavia Spencer, Hidden Figures, and Michelle Williams, Manchester by the Sea. Three black actresses in the supporting actress category this year. You know, they had the whole controversy last year because no black actors got nominated for anything, and people picketed and got really angry this year. Tons of them have been nominated. I think Viola Davis is a bit of a shoe-in.
Oh, I think so, too.
Pretty much, although, I'm still a big supporter of Michelle Williams, but I don't think she's considering how much screen time Viola Harris has in Fences.
Well, Nicole Kidman's really not in line really that much.
No.
I'm a little surprised they put her in there, but I think the Academy likes her, so...
They
put her in there, yeah. Best director, let's move on. La La Land, Damien Chazelle, Hacksaw Ridge, Mel Gibson, Moonlight, Barry Jenkins, Manchester by the Sea, Kenneth Lonergan, Arrival, Denis Villeneuve. I guess Damien Chazelle is the front runner. But I'm predicting a Mad Mel upset.
I wouldn't put any money on that.
That's when I saw Resident Evil Friday night, I went into the other theater and I watched the last half of Hacksaw Ridge again because of the 6 Oscar nominations that's been reissued in some theaters.
I'm going to go out on a limb and predict a Barry Jenkins upset because I'll bet there's a lot. Yeah, there are a lot of nominations for Moonlight. There's a lot of feeling for that. I think they might, he has a shot.
Mel or Jenkins would be upsets. Big upsets.
We'll see what the DGA says.
All right, let's move on. We're going to run out of time if we don't. An animated feature, Kubo and the Two Strings, Moana, My Life as a Zucchini, which I've never heard of, Red Turtle, which they're showing today. I've got a screener of it, and Zootopia.
I called that last time.
Did you?
Yeah, I said that there's going to be the five. And really? No funny
You called
Dory.
My Life as a Zucchini?
Yep.
What is that?
It's a little animated film out of Europe, and it's been getting a lot of buzz at the festival. So
hasn't played here yet.
No.
Finding Dory didn't get nominated. The Life of Pets didn't get nominated.
Sing did not get nominated.
Yeah.
I think Dory's the big surprise on that.
Yeah, definitely.
So popular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the wasn't it the top grossing movie of the year?
I think it might be Rogue One now.
Oh, Star Wars.
I think
beat it.
That might have taken over.
All right, adapted screenplay: Arrival, Fences, Hidden Figures, Lion, Moonlight. You know, Fences might win, although it's I don't know how much he adapted it. To tell you the truth, I'm sure he changed a few words here and there.
I think Kate, this is where you might see some Moonlight love on adapted
screenplay. Yeah, it could be because it is a great adaptation.
Let's move on. Original screenplay. 20th Century Woman. Is that the only nomination that got? I think it might be. Hell or High Water, La La Land, The Lobster, Manchester by the Sea. La La Land's not going to win this. Its strength is definitely not in its writing. Manchester by the Sea, I bet, is going to win. I'm glad they nominated The Lobster, though. That was in my top 10 list.
I'd love to see Hell or High Water get that.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
I would too.
That's the one I
mean, that's the best script on that list, in my opinion, but they'll give it to Manchester by the Sea. Yeah. Cinematography, flah, flah, flah.
And that's Arrival. Where silence is in cinematography.
Yeah.
Yep. And it is beautiful.
I thought Hacksaw Ridge should have been up for cinematography. Of course, I think that should be up for everything. Arrival, La La Land, Lion, Moonlight, Silence. It'll probably go to La La Land, which is a stunning looking
film. On cinematography, I'm going to agree with you about Hacksaw Ridge. I thought the cinematography in that was better than Lion, for example.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yes, indeed.
I couldn't give Mel too many noms. Best documentary, 13th. I saw that. Fire at Sea. I am not your Negro.
Don't know about Fire at Sea. You want to hear about that, Kate?
I know it was directed by Gianfranco Rossi. Life Animated, Jim saw that. And UJ Made in America, which I keep hearing about. Is that played here?
I know it's on streaming on Hulu or maybe Netflix now or something like that. Okay. Yeah, so you can watch it now. I think it actually mostly played on ESPN, didn't it? Yeah.
So there's three of these are about African Americans.
But not Life Animated.
I bet they give it to I Am Not Your Negro. That would be my guess.
Well, could be. Although Life Animated, he has a pretty touching story and a lot of Hollywood connections.
Right. That's true.
All right, let's move on. Best documentary short, who cares? Best live action short, who cares? Best foreign language film, A Man Called Oof, Land of Mine, Tana, The Salesman, and Tony Erdman. I have seen exactly zero of these.
Oh, no, really?
I've seen two. Have you seen?
How many have you seen, Kate?
I think I've seen two, but I'm on the verge of seeing three this afternoon.
Okay, that's right.
But of these, I would go. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. A Man Called Oof.
Yeah, that's really good.
That would be of the ones I've seen. That would be my favorite.
But Tony Erdman got a lot.
It's got its charms. Tony Erdman,
and I saw that, and I liked it, but it doesn't quite have as much as the other.
All right. So editing: Arrival, Hacksaw Ridge, Hello, Liar, Lauder, La La Land, Moonlight. That'll probably go to La La Land. Production design, we're going to have to pick up the pace here. Arrival, Fantastic Beasts, Hail Caesar, La La Land, and Passengers. Passengers? You're kidding me.
They had to create that spaceship, so there you go.
Yes. I'm glad to see Hail Caesar got something.
Oh, me too.
That's a great movie. We're going to have to wrap this up. Original score. I really like Jackie's score. I'm glad that's up. I don't think it's going to win. But,
I agree.
Anybody else want to say anything about score?
No,
I agree about Jackie.
Yeah, original song. Who cares?
Visual effects.
Makeup and hair. Suicide Squad. You're kidding. Suicide Squad got nominated for makeup and hair? Jeez.
Hmm.
Costume design, Allied. Allied. I think that's the only Allied nomination, isn't it?
Yeah.
I liked Allied. Fantastic Beasts. That was kind of a nice looking film. Florence Foster Jenkins, Jackie. La La Land's not going to win. Maybe Jackie might win that. They did a good job recreating the White House in the early 60s.
Yeah, I hope it gets something.
And visual effects, Deep Water Horizon, Doctor Strange, Jungle Book, Kubo, The Two Strings, and Rogue One. I bet they give this to Jungle Book.
Yeah, it's the most deserving, I think, of the five. So they did some amazing stuff in that movie.
Yeah, all right. Well, we always like to talk about the Oscars. We'll talk about them some more in the weeks ahead. When is the Oscars?
February 26th.
February 26th. That's coming up. That's the end of next month.
Before you know it.
And I assume I'm hosting the Oscars at the Tivoli. I haven't reached out to those guys, but I have the past couple of years. And that's always lots of fun, lots of Oscar trivia and stuff like that. But we're going to have to wrap up our Weird Movie Geeks podcast for now. Next week we'll be back and we'll review Space Between Us and Rings and Red Turtle and talk about some other stuff. But for now, I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Kate Marquis.
Thanks for joining us, Kate.
Thank you.
And be sure to check us out again next week.